Hello and welcome everyone to a very urgent and obviously very special episode of MTG Potpourri. With you as always is me, Tom, and joining me to my left is Conley BJ Woods.
I would just like to say that this time the special part is actually bullshit, and in addition to that, Tom was trying to sabotage the show by taking all of Adam's and I energy prior to the show for useless conversation.
But yeah, I feel like we held steadfast. Be talking like a Nerf ball.
We held steadfast, and we will put on an excellent show for you.
You
next
will.
Next up, to my left,
is Adam Hammerhead Staborski.
What? Hammerhead?
That's a cool nickname.
I am now apparently an ancient shark.
Did you guys always like our... There's a Hammerhead magic card, right? Is that the one that's from Dark?
Yes, there's a Hammerhead shark.
Yeah, he's a 2/3, and he can only attack or block to an island or something.
Yeah, that's kind of what I remember. It was actually kind of a pseudo wall.
No, it's not an island. They have to have an island, maybe. Yeah, so obviously you have an island because you cast them. I'll look it up. Continue on.
Hammerhead shark is a blue and a colorless 2/3. It can Hammerhead shark can't attack unless defending player controls an island.
All right.
It says, with a flavor text of cross the eyes of a hammerhead and you'll dot its teeth.
So why is Adam Hammerhead? What is his nickname?
I don't know. I just came up with a name. Same like Boner Jams. I had really no... I just picked it out of the air.
I mean, it's up to Adam, but I don't think this one's sticking.
No. I'm just going to keep throwing stuff at the wall until it works. I'm kind of like Google of nicknames. You just keep trying stuff until something seems to hit. So guys, I mean, we'll talk a little bit about Grand Prix Philly. When you guys were both there, do you ever meet up? Or is Adam doing his thing and Conley's doing his thing and eating ice cream at Walmart at midnight?
Well, I'm occasionally requested to do my thing while Adam does his thing, for Adam doing his thing.
So do you guys do your things together?
Yeah, exactly.
Just do it, you know, get together, pull off a Dak Faden?
I'll let Adam explain. Go ahead, Adam.
No, we don't do anything together.
Is it on the show floor, or do you guys go back to the hotel room?
No, I was saying that sometimes I'm requested to do like deck techs or answer some questions, not just from Adam, but from various coverage people. Just as a pro member, they just come around and they'll like do quick questions with you, or sometimes if you're doing well in the tournament or you have a sweet deck, they'll do a deck tech with you. And at some tournaments, Adam is the one administering these interview questions and or deck techs.
Like he's giving an MMPI or something.
Yes. So we intersect. Our paths have intersected during those moments.
Do you guys walk by and give each other that little head nod and like a wink maybe? Just be like, yeah, I know you. What's up?
No. We do the thing with like the locker room butt slap. It's just like this loud, piercing crack. But nobody notices because it's a big Grand Prix.
Yeah.
Would you term that a butt crack then?
More of a slap. Like a good game. Yeah.
I would be the one to pay $20 to see you guys barely give each other the locker room butt slap just in the middle of the tournament floor like a Grand Prix.
The real question is, why would you be willing to pay $20 to see this?
Hey, we all have things that make our boats float. Yeah.
Stop.
Remember the bearskin rug? Remember?
Tom, I will take $20 from you at Grand Prix Minneapolis and make this happen, but I want the $20 first.
Yeah, I mean, if I wanted to be sick, I'd pay you guys $20 to slap me on the butt. That would be how you kind of go a little kind of creepy on it while we're in endless chats.
Once again, I would like to remind people that we are, in fact, a magic podcast. We just sometimes do not adhere to anything.
So let's jump right into it. We have a bunch of new previews for Journey into Nyx. And so far, it's not often that so far everybody is, I'd say, unanimously excited for a set.
Can I have one gripe at the beginning of the show here about Journey into Nyx? Do you guys think it would have been better as just Journey to Nyx? It's so much easier to say just Journey to Nyx. But Journey into Nyx is like it's harsh. I just always want to call it Journey to Nyx.
Yeah, I find it for some reason that doesn't fit. I would say in my mind it's Journey to Nyx. That's why I see it. Whenever I try to say it, I have to be like, is it to or is it into?
Marketing people, get your together. All right.
Hold on here. Maybe it's because I have linguistic inferiority, or what I would probably argue, linguistic superiority, but I have no problem with Journey into Nyx. I've had actually, like, this is the first time I've heard anybody complain that into is just a syllable too much.
First of all, of course, it's the first time you've heard anybody complain about it. It's not a real thing. I'm just out of my mind. Second of all, listen, you can't even tell Journey into Nyx, Journey Stevie Nyx. You just can't tell the difference. They're like too many. They're too close.
It's five syllables. That's too
Journey
many.
To Nyx. Journey Duh Knicks. Like, you should be able to say two, like, duh, journey to Knicks. You should be able to New York match.
And when
you know
when
why they, Knicks, Conley? If you journey to Knicks, literally, Elspeth would, like, walk up to the border and be like, yep, I'm here. The story is actually going into it.
No, if I say I'm going to Paris, you don't think, oh, he's going to go to the edge of Paris. You think he's going into Paris. It's shortcut terminology.
All I'm saying is
we're a real people, and we need to get real talk. And I'm just saying, marketing people, look into this. I don't want my journey Stevie Nicks.
It should be journey to Knicks, and the two should be the numeral two. You know, like step up to the streets. This would be journey to Knicks.
Exactly. Tom knows how it goes. You gotta get that. You gotta make it look cool on the package.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm tweeting this shit, you know, I don't want to be typing the whole INTO. I want to use just the numeral two. And it just
plus the hashtag. I will say this: everyone has actually pointed this out to me. Jew is a bad hashtag.
Yeah, I would. I'm
Jew is not an acceptable hashtag.
They could call the gin.
You have a lot of directions to go with that one. Jew is not an appropriate one. All right, that one is for
real. They could have did JIN. Yo, let's go draft some Jew. Yeah, it's just like that sounds weird and potentially offensive in different countries.
All right, now let's talk about the amazing preview cards.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there was a bunch even since last week, so maybe we'll just do the old style Mendonite magic if we go around the circle, pick out a couple cards, and say, hey, I think these are cool. And why?
Do it.
Conley, I know you're chomping at the virtual bit.
Wait. They just had a long dose of Conley. Give him some Adam. Bring him back to Conley later. All right.
Come on, Adam. Give me just a big old journey into Knicks preview butt slap. Your nickname is now butt slap. I hope you know that.
So one of the commander archetypes I've really enjoyed building is the steal your stuff and then sacrifice it, throw it away for value. Like, not only am I taking it and like slapping you over the head with like your dragon, but then I'm gonna sacrifice your dragon and draw a bunch of cards. Like, how do you like that? Blood-braided, Prosh the Sky Raider, like those are kind of your archetypical commanders where like you sacrifice stuff, like Shatterang Brothers. You know, both of those later two cards are in the most recent commander set. The card that I'm actually really secretly excited about is Harness by Force. And this is the Strive card that's basically Strive Threaten. So like for every, you know, two colors and a red you have, you can just steal another guy. So once you're trying to steal three total, that's one more mana than Insurrection, which is just steal everybody's stuff. So, you know, you're kind of at a, like, it's not quite as exciting at that point.
It's Commander. So, I mean, you only get one of each card, so...
Right. Well, it's you know it's you know it can be way more expensive than Insurrection, but the fact that you can use it you know earlier or you know for six mana, like the flexibility of Strive there in that case, like I really like it because sometimes you don't want to take everybody's stuff and piss everybody off, or that you know you don't want to steal a bunch of tokens that you can't kill, but like if you steal these two dragons, I can like bop somebody over the head and almost kill them, and like that's you know that's worth it. Yeah, so it's just that was kind of like the one Strive card that really jumped out at me as like, you know, this is something I definitely am going to look for and do some work with.
I would like to point out that if you see this limited, please take it and win the game with it. Thank you. You just put 6 or 9 man into this unlimited and the game's over. Like Act of Treason or Threaten or whatever you want to call it is like a pretty powerful card on its own. But when you're starting to take two or three creatures, it is so difficult to play around that type of spell because they're having to like not only just leave guys back on defense because they want to attack at some point, they want to start dealing damage to you. So if they ever get too greedy and let's say they have 5 creatures out and they attack with 2 creatures and you untap and you kick this for 3 and you steal all their creatures, like the game's over. Like it is an extremely powerful spell. Especially the fact that it does not cost 9 mana, it costs 3 mana, and you get to choose what to do with it. So definitely take it and enjoy.
Right. To kind of translate that a different way, like in a generally aggressive deck, like one Act of Treason is usually fine. Like it's a good way to break a stalemate or to steal, you know, like if they have some sort of fatty you can't answer, you can get some value out of that. But the fact that it scales up, so like if you draw it on turn 6 and you have 6 mana, suddenly, you know, you can just like take their 2 blockers that they were holding on and just like, you know, deal 10, 12 damage all at once. It really will just win games.
Well, it makes combat math really difficult. It'd be like, I don't know if he's going to steal 1, 2, if he doesn't have it in, even have, I keep saying he, I'm sorry, if they even have it in their hand. It just, makes it much more variable, which is cool.
Wait, there's non-he's?
Yes. Before I get myself in big, big trouble, we're using the royal they. Because I know you're supposed to say he or she. I just find that annoying. It's like, I don't want to say into. I just want to say to. I'm just going to say they.
He-man, hero.
Well, I'm going to take one next. We'll keep going around the circle here. I'm going to pull Conley's, you know, blue, black, and red.
I'm trying to get Tom in trouble for no reason.
But I was excited to see yet another kind of creature lord with... Is it Fairies Band Warchief? I don't know how to pronounce the first part of that. Three and a green. It's a 3/3. A rare. It's a centaur warrior. Vigilance, trample. Other centaur creatures you control get +1/+1, vigilance, and trample. So, I mean, it's still a 4-mana 3/3 that has vigilance and trample, which I guess in limited is probably always playable. But for casual constructed, you can now play centaurs. And there are actually a bunch of centaurs currently in standard, even if you don't count Journey into Nyx, with 14 currently, which is pretty cool. Apparently nobody else thinks this is cool as I do.
What? Wait. So explain your exact, like, little – what exactly you're trying to pull off here.
Oh, it's tribal. I'm just excited to have a creature lord.
Well, sure. I mean, there's all kinds of insane creature lords in this block, and he's definitely a sweet one. I agree with you.
And centaurs don't get a ton of love in general, so I'm happy to see a – and a decently costed, it's not – it has a fairly good size to it, which matches centaurs. Usually they're not going to be 1/1, 2/2s. Usually they're 3/3s, 2/4s, or bigger in general. But
yeah, I think the majority of centaurs in this block are 3/3s. It's kind of what defines them, like the 2/3s defined by minotaurs or whatever. But yeah, this guy, I don't think he's constructed playable. I haven't actually done a search for what centaurs exist in the
I'm just trying to think of ones that were decent. We have the Battlemaster. That's the heroic that gets 3+1/+1 counters.
Okay.
We have the Centaur Healer. That's the 3/3/3 that gets you 3 life.
Yeah, they're all reasonable, like, things. But I don't think that any of them are currently really that sought after and constructed.
I think the only one might be the Cursor of Krufix.
Oh, Cursor of Krufix is very good, yes. But he's not really played in a type of deck that really wants to get +1/+1 trample and vigilance.
No.
Like he's more of a control card or a mid-range card. So this guy's like definitely sweet. I'm always happy to have cool lord cards out there, but I would probably go elsewhere for constructed unless you're just looking for some fun. Because this guy does look sweet for just like a sweet deck.
Yeah, this would be, like I said, this would be kind of your casual, maybe like a FNM level tournament play where it's like, yeah, I just want to try this out. It might be fun. I'll win a few games. And I can yell at people that I beat them with a deck full of centaurs.
You even get to play the really good 2-drop. Swordwise Centaur is actually constructed playable, so he's a reasonable guy to start your curve off with, because you're not going to have a ton of good low drops that are centaurs, but he's a solid one.
Yeah, and also there are some other green centaurs that give you – there's at least one with devotion to green, so you might be able to pull off a pretty whopping life game. Yeah,
with you some life.
So cool. Conley, what are you excited about? There are a bunch of what seem like very terminant playable rares that we've seen.
Correct. I would like to say that this set is – I was very unexcited for Born of the Gods. It was probably my least favorite reveal in quite a while. This, on the other hand, is one of my favorite reveals in quite a while. I mean, Eric Lauer was the lead design for this. I have much respect for him as a designer. He basically hit a home run, and we have not even seen half the set. But – everything from the uncommons to the mythics to the rares, they're all exciting. Even little things like Riddle Lightning being reprinted. That was one of my favorite cards from Time Spiral. I'm really excited to see it back. But if I want to go to talk about some exciting cards, I'm going to scroll through here. I literally have infinite that I could talk about. Let's go with... I'll go with a Dredge card that I wrote about. So Strength from the Fallen is colorless and a green enchantment. Constellation, whenever Strength from the Fallen or another enchantment enters the battlefield under your control, target creature gets +X/+X until end of turn, where X is the number of creature cards in your graveyard. So I'm talking about this because it is a card that I'm going to be messing around with in the Dredge deck that I've mentioned many times. It's extremely exciting in that it produces a gigantic output. You know, you're talking +6/+6, +7/+7. Does it for 2 mana, and it's repeatable. So when you look at this with our preview card from last week, Farrakha, you play this. Let's say you have 6 mana. You play this. You give some do some 1/1 plus 6 plus 6, and that's a conservative number. But you give him plus 6 plus 6, you activate a Ferrica, you give another guy plus 5 plus 5, you activate a Ferrica, you give another guy plus 4 plus 4. That's like a huge turn for only 6 mana, and you created two 1/1s, which is not that bad. Or a more reasonable line is just, again, I'm going to do a 6 mana play because I think that's where this is at its best. You play this, and then you bestow a Night Howler onto something. That gives three of your creatures plus X plus X, where X is the number of creatures in your graveyard. Night Howler even gives them your opponent's graveyard, too. So this card's like really exciting in terms of a pump spell. Not too many pump spells get to see playing constructed, but because this one has effectively unlimited scaling, it's pretty exciting to me. And I think Dredge will play it in some numbers, like one or two, maybe three at the most. You don't want it really early because it doesn't do much early game. That's one of its weaknesses, is it is a mid-game to late-game card. But it is one of the more interesting cards that I have my eye on right now.
Yeah, but at least being a two-cost enchantment, you might be getting other benefits from cards in this block.
Yeah, exactly. You're giving devotion to the Ferrica itself, which is nice, and you're triggering other constellation effects. But yeah, it's pretty sweet.
It's something too. As I every time I read this card in my mind, I subconsciously replace one another enchantment with another creature. So it seems right that the enchantment, is, but it's counting creatures in the graveyard.
Yeah.
All right, Adam. How about you? What is your next card of the week?
I mean, this isn't a card of the week, and it's probably, it's definitely a little further off the radar than Commander. So I really love Popper Cube, and I kind of maintain my cube and tweak it a lot, and I really focus on making sure every color pair has archetypes, and you know, it's definitely focused on a draft first environment where, like, you know, if you know what you're doing, you can really go deep and get the most out of synergies, but it's still a cube where cards are generally powerful, and so. This one card really stood out for me the other night, and it's Renowned Weaver. And this is a 1/1 for 1. It's green. And basically, it's just a dorky little elf or human shaman. But it has this ability where for 1 and a green, you sacrifice it, and you get a 1/3 spider enchantment creature token with reach. So you can take a 1/1 1 drop and turn it into a 1/3 defensive guy. And... well, normally that still doesn't sound that exciting for the ramp decks, like red green ramp, where it's got, like, you know, drafted fireball and some other big splashy beastie guys, or blue green ramp where you want to get into like Capsize and Sprout Swarm territory to kind of take over the game. This is just a really super defensive guy where, you know, you can block with 2 mana up, stop damage, turn it into a 1/3, which you can keep blocking 2/2s, but it also stops flying guys. You know, it just gives you a lot of flexibility. So I'm kind of excited to see if that's part of a cycle, if there's going to be some other guys like that where I can come down early, or they kind of fit into a slot that typically there isn't an option for that deck, and it becomes a, you know, something really useful later on.
Yeah. And I'm going to jump in because I'm excited that they did a functional reprint of one of my favorite commons of all time in Mesmeric Fiend.
Yeah.
I just love the nightmares from basically the, what's the name of the block for like Scourge and all the other ones? I can't remember what the first set was. It Torment? What was the first set in that?
Scourge was for you from Onslaught block, which is the block after. It was Odyssey. It has Torment in it.
Torment. Okay. I love the Nightmare cards as they tend to be like commons or uncommons. We had Faceless Butcher and Mesmeric Fiend. They give, in general, a pretty powerful ability. They were commons and they were cheap to play. So how they reprinted this, we have, and it's a pretty cool name, we have Brain Maggot. I'm a little annoyed because they made it an uncommon where Mesmeric Fiend was uncommon before, but it's a black and a colorless. It is an enchantment creature insect, so it's going to give you all those benefits of having enchantments in this block. It's a 1/1, but it says when Brain Maggot enters the battlefield, target opponent reveals his or her hand, you choose a non-land card from it. You exile that card until the Brain Maggot leaves play. Or excuse me, leaves the battlefield. Pardon me. It's a 2/1/1, so that may be not that exciting, but you get to at least nuke one card in their hand. And if they really want it back, they're wasting a removal spell on a 1/1, which to me always felt like a win.
Yeah, it is a sweet card. I will be playing much of it in Dredge. It's actually really nice in Dredge because Dredge wants Thoughtseize really badly, but Dredge Thoughtseize being on a creature is that much better because now you have an extra creature to count in your graveyard. So you're, when you sideboard, your creature count doesn't drop as much. Plus, if your opponent is using removal on your Brain Maggot, that means they're using basically a Detention Sphere or a Hero's Downfall because you likely took their Supreme Verdict. And in that case, they are taking off an entire turn where they're not going to but likely be able to do that plus Supreme Verdict. So you get an entire turn of your fatties getting in one last time, which could just be all you need. So it's actually very reasonable, even though it's not, you know, a permanent solution to the card.
And before I hand over Conley, I am unreasonably excited for one of the latest in the Dictate cycle from this set is Dictate of Erebos. I have always loved me some Grave Pact. It's probably one of my favorite enchantments that literally does nothing until you sacrifice your creature. So it just sits there. But we have two black and three colorless. It's an enchantment, rare, has flash, like all the other Dictates. Whenever a creature you control dies, each opponent sacrifices a creature. Just warms my insides. It also has, maybe not as helpful for devotion. It doesn't have three black in the casting cost, but it's also a bit, little bit easier to splash. Where Grave Pact was basically impossible to play anything but a mono black deck.
Yeah, this is, I mean, this deck, this card's sweet. It might be constructed playable, although I doubt it. But it is a powerful and unique effect. And usually when an effect is 100% exclusive, which this is, like I've literally never seen the effect before besides on Grave Pact. I guess maybe there was it on a vampire, if I remember correctly. I think there was a Grave Pact vampire. But usually when an effect is exclusive like this, there's a chance for it to be played just because there's a niche that's available and somebody goes looking for an answer to it and they're like, oh, well, here's this card, and nothing else does it, so we'll run it. So there's definitely a chance of this display, and it's a really sweet card in general. I do love Grave Pact. Maybe not as much as Tom does, but I love it.
Just for going because it was Stronghold, I believe, was the original set for Grave Pacts?
I'm not going to say yes, because I don't know.
Oh, we're going to find out.
So Adam probably knows.
Yeah, Grave Pact was Stronghold.
Okay, good. Let's say that is one I admit, I like the old art better than kind of the new art that was in, like, yeah, Commander sets.
Eighth edition.
Yeah, exactly. I just prefer the old art, but I don't care. Grave Pact has always been one of my favorite cards. Conley, what is the next card that truly has you excited?
All right, I'm going to a card that has me unreasonably excited, and it shouldn't. Its name is Nyx Fleece Ram. It is colors and a white. Enchantment creature. It's a 0/5.
Oh, this one's awesome. And you just gain life.
At the beginning of your upkeep, you gain a life.
It's a goddamn sheep. Bam.
It's a sheep. It's just bad.
It's just bad. Seriously.
It's not actually bad.
It's a wall that can theoretically attack with a pump spell or something else.
Yeah, this card I think is actually quite constructive playable. It requires that the format be or the metagame be a little bit different than it is right now. Right now, there's not too much aggro mid-rangey, but 0/5 is big enough to block a lot of things, most of the things. You get to block Boros Reckoners without taking damage or dealing it damage or anything like that. You get to block Gore Clan Rampagers if you're going up even higher. Usually, you're going to be able to block the Scavenging Oozes and all those two drops of Burning Tree Emissaries and the Ash Zealots and all that stuff and not have to worry about a dang thing. Meanwhile, that would not be good enough on its own, just a thing that blocks. But the fact that this scales your life up means that you're actually gaining an advantage every single turn this sits out there. And it forces people to overextend into Supreme Verdict while you buy enough time to actually draw your Supreme Verdict. So I think that this is a really interesting card for Constructed because it's just borderline. Like, it's not like a lock, like Wall of Omens or something like that is. But I think that if the metagame shifts a little bit and aggressive decks get stronger, this card will be a very popular sideboard choice. You've already seen Yoke Docks seeing play in Constructed in sideboards. And if you compare Yoke Docks to this, it's like not even close. Like, this card is significantly better. And it's an enchantment if you're triggering Constellation or anything like that for whatever that is worth.
And and Adam, you too, I want to ask you if you thought this may have some crazy combo potentials. Basically, I think it was actually just came out today, is the Tethmos High Priest. It's the 2/3 cat cleric. It's a 2 and a white. It has a really interesting heroic trigger that whenever you cast a spell that targets him, return target creature with converted mana cost 2 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield. To me, this just screams some sort of weird hijinks with Snapcaster Mage in Modern.
I'm sure this is going to be very good with Snapcaster Mage. I'm sure it's going to be very good with a lot of things. The weirdest, I don't know. I haven't looked up all the combos of this. I don't know if there is a known combo. I'm sure there potentially is. But it is just a very strong card. The weird thing to me is that it's uncommon. I would not have expected this to be uncommon. Like
it seems like a rare.
Yeah, you could have left this at the exact same stats and everything and made it rare, and I would have never griped about it. Like, it seems very rare. I don't know.
For this set, do you feel like there was a way that they decided which creatures would be enchantment creatures versus just plain cat clerics that are not enchantments?
I think they specifically went for enchantment creatures do something that an enchantment would do, and specifically that an enchantment has done in the past, as to not be confusing. And they all need to have permanent effects that take place at all times as one of their requirements. So if you look at all the enchantment creatures, like the sheep I just mentioned, he gains life every turn, so that's a guaranteed thing that's going to happen regardless.
What about like Brain Maggot? I guess that's the one that's kind of thrown me off on this one. What enchantment would...
Is that an enchantment creature?
Yeah, it's an enchantment creature, insect.
Oh.
This is what
I did not know that one was an enchantment.
Yeah, that's why I got a little confused. I'm just like, how do they pick which ones are which?
I guess that one just because it's like exiles the card, so they're trying to like line it up with the Oblivion Ring of that reprint, because they reprinted Oblivion Ring in the set too.
Oh, yeah.
Under a new new name, Banishing Light or something.
No, what is it? Well, Banishing Light.
It is a little different. It can only target things opponents control, so it prevents the infinite looping of Oblivion Ring. Like, if you have no other valid targets, then, like, three of them kind of going in a circle.
Sure.
But it also has the triggers modified, so it's not a separate trigger. So no matter what happens, you're going to get back. Your opponent's going to get back whatever was exiled.
Yes. Which is the exact same case for Brain Maggot. So I guess they were probably just trying to mirror that and say this is an enchantment-like effect. It'd be cooler, I guess, if this effect had been done on an enchantment before. But most of the enchantment creatures, like the 2/1 that gives you Hexproof, like that makes total sense, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of these just have like a permanent thing. It's like, you know, your creatures do this or whatever. Or they have Constellation, of course. If a creature has Constellation, then it's an enchantment. But
oh yeah, and I also feel like we should take a minute to pour one out onto the floor. That we've talked about the kind of the creep of creature power is poor Flying Man. You know, from Arabian Nights, he was a 1/1 flyer for blue. He was awesome. We've had Sprite since then. He has just been basically banished to the backseat of the bus by Hypnotic Siren.
This is where you read what Hypnotic Siren does, Tom.
Yes, it's a blue. It's a 1/1 flyer. But it's an enchantment creature siren, so it has bestow for 7, 2 blue and 5, and you control enchanted creature. It gets +1/+1 and has flying.
So, I would like to point out a couple things, Tom. First of all, this is not strictly better than Flying Man, so do not say Flying Man is pushed to the back of the bus. This is a 1/1 enchantment creature. Flying Man has never died to a disenchant in his life, so shame on you. Second of all, many decks, especially many decks that play Flying Man, do not have the ability nor desire to reach to 7 mana. So
every once in a while it's going to happen. You'd be
yes,
like, I wish I had one in my hand.
I agree that it will happen. And for most purposes, if there is a deck in Standard that would have played Flying Man, it will play this and be glad that it is better than Flying Man. But it is not strictly better. I don't actually know what decks in Standard would want to play this, just because 7 mana mind control is not really playable and 1 mana 1/1 fire is not really playable right now. So it'd have to be a really unique deck. But for limited, this thing is super sweet. So that's all I gotta say.
I still feel bad for the Flying Man. So if you got your time shifted once, too bad.
But they can be foiled, Tom. You get a foil time shifted Flying Man.
So can my siren. So what do you got for that? What do you got for that, Adam? Huh? I'm in your face. I'm inside your mind right now.
I don't know. There is another card. Speaking of all these enchantments, there is another card I am finally glad to see. I knew it had to be coming at some point, and I'm just glad everybody can finally shut up about how the gods can't be dealt with, and oh my god, the gods are the worst thing ever.
Oh my god, the gods are
the greatest thing on the thing, and they're unbeatable. Is Deicide?
It's a cool name. It is a really cool name. I'll give it.
That. I think I it's really Deicide. Like, first of all, no.
I think it's Deicide because I'd say it's deity.
No, it's deity.
Yeah. Oh, God, we're going to have to go to the dictionary. To
it's definitely deity.
It's not, let me pull it up here, dictionary.com. Keep talking. I'm going to hopefully prove
correct. Anyway, so Deicide is basically, it's Revoke Existence, which is exile target enchantment, except this is instant speed, which is great because there hasn't been that many... That many instant speed enchantment removals, but this is just like, hey, by the way, if you targeted a a card with the god subtype. You get to search their hand and library and graveyard and exile any number of those gods. So if you zap somebody's Erebos or whatever that's in play, you get to go get rid of them all. So it's like Cranial Extraction meets Revoke Existence, which is just obviously a very universal, you know, it's one blight mana, so it's splashable even. Just a very simple spell that just says screw you, God, which is great. I just like that.
Is it weird? Do you feel like this was a problem? It seems like a lot of people's hackles get raised when they admit, and I'm not saying that's what this is, where they print what I would call. What the heck was it? It was just randomly muting me on back and forth.
I don't know.
It's all done right now, thank God.
All right.
I don't think the gods are were a problem. I mean, most of the decks that are doing their thing, like Thassa is obviously good in the mono blue deck, but Erebos hasn't really been seen in the mono black deck, and he's kind of like a one of two of. He's just kind of like a grindy card, advantage card. The great red green monsters, you know, Xenagos the Reveler. He's been like a one of or two of. You know, I'm not saying any of the gods have been a problem or they're expecting them to be, but this is just something I expected because they like to have these release valves. Like, let's say they accidentally messed up in, you know, two sets from now, and they release something that just makes one of the gods just super dumb. This is one of the ways where people will have an answer for a god if a god becomes an absolute central component that's nigh unbeatable without this type of god, anti-god, you know, bullet.
But doesn't that tell you that maybe the gods were not well designed? They have to have a magic bullet. That's just, it's something I think, it seems like a lot of magic players get very defensive about.
All right, go ahead.
No, you've got this, Conley. I know what you're going to say. Go ahead.
All right. It doesn't say anything about how the gods are designed. I am personally not a big fan of the call out due to it being in the same block. I think it's a little too loud. I think that it's too explicit for what its purpose is. I would have liked something like Scour, for example, a little bit better because it's a little more hidden. I understand why they did this. They did it because it's a big story moment. It's a tie-in. Elspeth kills a god. You're not supposed to be able to kill gods. It's a big deal. Woohoo. But at the same time, I don't know. It's kind of like when they first made Planeswalkers and they were like, we're not going to say anything kills a Planeswalker. We want them to be special. And of course they broke that rule 6 years down the line, but this, they literally broke the rule kind of like in the same block. And so it's kind of weird. I mean, I understand that they're not going to go forth and keep printing gods from here on out. So like they can't print this two blocks from now. So they kind of were constrained in where they could actually do it. And you know, it is a sweet idea. It's a really sweet story moment. But yeah, it's a little bit too loud of a call out for me, but I don't think it says anything about the god designs. They basically just wanted to get this card in. I think that the gods, there's plenty of answers to gods, things like Revoke Existence and Detention Sphere and stuff already. So I think that, and when you're playing gods, you generally play two to three of it. You're not playing four or five. never mind. Nobody knows that joke. It's a cheating magic story joke, but yeah, it's
get out your nerd hat, put it on.
I don't know, it is a cool card. It is powerful. You're basically going to play this over Revoke Existence most of the time due to all of the powerful artifacts are also enchantments right now. So basically you have like Pithing Needle and the new Honor the Pier for any color, I guess. Those are probably like the only real like artifacts that see play. Maybe Elixir of Immortality, we're obviously never hitting that.
And so, Hall of Triumph is legendary too, so that kind of helps.
Yeah, exactly. So this is mostly going to see play where Revoke Existence was because it's an instant and it has huge upside for the gods. So it'll definitely see constructive play regardless of whether the gods are seeing play, which is kind of neat, I guess.
Okay. And at this, we had a little bit of a audio weirdness happen there for a second, but I did want to point out that I was right.
No. I look over in this bar.
I'm not going to watch a random YouTube video. I don't trust you.
It says how to pronounce deity.
I'm going by, this is the actual, the dictionary definition of how to pronounce this word says deity.
I'm looking at the Oxford Dictionary, and it says deity.
Oxford Dictionary.
Yes. You're going to say there's a more official thing than the Oxford Dictionary, Tom?
I would have to say, is the Oxford, is that giving you the British pronunciation or the American?
What? You're going to pull British? You're going to pull British versus American? Yes. Oh, my
God. I call it a drunk trunk. I don't call it a boot. So I pronounce it deity.
My gosh. I'm right, Tom. It's deity. I'll just say you could call it your way too, but your way sounds really weak, puny, and lame. And mine sounds powerful. Mine sounds like an actual deity.
It's like a full blown, you know, Adam Buslap Szysporski, you know, getting you in a Grand Prix.
I'm a deity, guys.
Actually, I think after thinking about it a little bit more, I think maybe we've been all wrong. I think maybe it's deicide, because it's really when like a diet goes off the rails. Like it is done.
I like that.
That means the meal.
It'd just be a rain of Slim Jims for me. They'd just be raining from the sky, because I cannot resist those things.
Slim Jims are your go-to diet breaker?
Oh, God, I love the pepperoni Slim Jims. Oh, God.
That sounds not like a diet breaker. That just sounds like you're killing yourself with whatever chemicals are in that thing.
Yeah, because it tastes completely not made of on Earth. It's very artificial taste, but it's something about it. It's just amazing. It doesn't taste like pepperoni at all.
This is what our doctors put in their bodies, folks, yeah. And they expect us to be able to eat well.
Just salty and chemicals.
I am just so excited now that when I get to hug Tom at Grand Prix Minneapolis, I get to whisper in his ear, no, Tom, that's pepperoni Slim Jim just for you.
Yeah, there you go.
Does this confirm Tom's veterinarianness even more? Because they do have like pepperonis and stuff, and
he's literally eating a dog treat.
Yes, you're actually
eating actually a dog is pretty treat. Close. I've eaten dog treats in the past, and when I grew up, we had a husky. It was like, you know, like the family pet was this. It was a cool dog. It was a husky, and I mean, you're 10. You're just like, I'm curious why this dog likes this treat so much. It was bacon strips, and the dog would have like a little seizure waiting for this bacon strip. It's like, well, why are they so good? They're not. They were truly designed for animals.
They're not even designed for animals. They're just slightly better than the crap they normally eat.
What do we do with all these lips and assholes that are left over? Bacon strips, fake bacon. There you go.
All right.
I don't know where we were. Oh, that's what we're talking about.
We're doing cards.
Yeah,
we're not doing cards, but we're talking.
Unless you want me to.
A Johnny, it might be. One of the few.
There's got to be some just fabulous fan fiction out there with elves and goblins and golems. God knows what they're doing.
All right. Anyway, send in your feedback. Tell Tom he's wrong. It's deity. And let's move on.
Yeah. I would be interested. Like, what is the, you know, like you mentioned Oxford, what is the official?
There's no official anything. It's language. You could do whatever the hell you want.
That's I want to hear if anybody that listens, I don't feel like an editor for a newspaper or something where words in the American English language are your life. How do you pronounce it?
An editor of a newspaper know how things are pronounced? You don't need to pronounce things when you're typing them. Second of all, you need to get like a public speaker or something like that.
Yeah, who would be a master?
Who's a public speaker? Who speaks in public a lot? If only there was somebody on the call. This is like a podcast or something.
Yeah, there'd be a god damn it.
If only there was somebody out there.
Neil deGrasse Tyson.
I guess we'll never find anybody who knows how to say deity.
I'll believe him.
Neil deGrasse Tyson would definitely say deity.
Just established it's deity. God.
Oh, yeah. I forgot.
Okay, let's move on. I am concerned now at this point. So are there any other cards?
Tom, can you pronounce cards correctly? Trust his deity pronunciation?
Are there any other cards, Magic the Gathering cards, collectible card game, Hasbro trademark? Are there any other cards that have you excited from the set?
There's a bunch, but I literally can't talk about them all because there's too many. Like this set it's just packed full. There's commons that I'm excited about. The new Rampant Growth I'm excited about. It's a stupid common. It's just for anyone that doesn't know.
Font of Fertility?
Yeah, just a green mana, then you pay a colorless and a green, sacrifice it, and Rampant Growth.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that card is definitely worse than Rampant Growth. I'm not trying to say it's better. It'll trigger your constellation triggers and blah, 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 blah. But the fact that we get a Rampant Growth at all in Standard is nice. Like, you see how popular Sylvan Carry did it is for a reason, and this is kind of another outlet to do that. So now you can have a more consistent ramp deck, which is kind of cool.
See, I like it because one of my favorite Rampant Growth effects is Diligent Farmhand. You remember that card, Conley?
Yes.
It's just a 1-1 for one, and it's basically this ability.
No, oh, no, it is better. Because it counts towards your muscle bursts. Don't forget that.
Oh, God, those were the days of Odyssey. I loved it.
Oh, man. Right, so if you're playing the muscle burst deck, that's going to be a strictly better addition. But one of the things that I really like is that you know, there's kind of like this Soul Ring effect. I kind of call it in Commander. You know, like if you open turn one with Soul Ring, or you have turn two Soul Ring, it just you just start moving fast, and you can get way ahead before people can catch up. And one of the things that I really liked in green are these one drops that are effectively like a rampant growth effect, because it gives you something to do on turn one that you're going to get value out of. It's just a little extra. It gives you a bump faster. And that little bump, if you get a couple of them early, it just stacks up. I've just really liked Diligent Farmhand and Commander, and the fact that I get a second one now just delighted me.
So I mean, do we jump right into just baseless speculation about the partial preview of the Dak Faden Planeswalker?
Go for it. I am not really amused by this, so you can have it.
I don't like these kind of spoilers, I'll be honest with you.
I still don't even understand what's going on with this thing. Like why is it chopped? It just doesn't feel right for like kind of like a marquee card in a set while we're already in the middle of another spoiler season. It just feels really weird.
Yeah, this is for the next. This is not even in this set, right?
Oh, I guess I didn't. Right. I don't know.
This is from the next set.
This is not even for the next set. Isn't this for the
secret set? CNS. Set? Or is this Conspiracy?
Conspiracy, yeah. Which is not actually a block. It's just like a standalone set, right?
Oh, we could give a shit less now. Okay, cool.
Yeah, so it's for Conspiracy, which I believe, I don't know what they're doing with Conspiracy, but it's got all kinds of weird things going on in it. Like draft mix up. I don't know. Mm-hmm. If you read any of the cards for it, I don't even know if it'll be a constructed legal set. Maybe
it does. They did say initially that a vast majority of the cards would be. I don't remember the exact number. There's like 10 or 15 cards that would not be constructed legal. And they're the ones that did weird things like put back in the pack and get a new card. Okay.
So, I mean, this is from that set, which is like weird that they're even previewing it now. I really don't get it. It kind of takes away from some of the fun, my opinion.
I guess, yeah. We'll just finish it up, then we'll move on. Is basically what they've given us so far is we know that it has three abilities. Is a +1, a -2, and a -6. And
they start off with their sentences with draw two cards or something. Target player draws two cards. People are speculating what it does. Then the second line says something like
gain control of something.
Yeah, gain control of blank. And then the bottom line has some stuff about targeting things with spells.
Yeah, and an emblem.
So it's like people are obviously have all kinds of speculation as to what it could say. But to be honest, it's like not really worth your brain space to figure it out. Like, to spend whatever energy you were going to spend to figure out what Dak Faden could say and like solve a world problem or like, you know, help be a big brother to a kid. Do something meaningful, please. I beg of you. Do a crossword puzzle. Anything.
Yeah, those help police reduce the chance of Alzheimer's. So there you go.
Yeah. You literally are just going to be guessing at nothing for no reason. So
I mean, kind of like you said, you could talk infinitely about this set. Do you maybe want to pick two or three more cards before we jump into a little bit of M15 talk?
Nope, going to M15 talk.
Wow, okay. That's a big strike.
I mean, we can do more cards at the end if we're like, we have no idea how long the M15 talk is. Maybe it's going to be 6 hours of M15 talk.
I think it's going to be pretty short because I think some of us we're doing sort of the big eyebrows up. Like, I don't know if this seems kind of gimmicky. Is press release came out today, and this is related to PAX. Talking about M15, this is a new core set, comes out July 18th. This announcement was made at PAX East with George Fan, who designed Plants vs. Zombies. Don't know if he was involved in the IAP Fest Plants vs. Zombies 2, but he revealed he actually designed one of the cards in M15, which was Genesis Hydra. In case you haven't seen it, it's 2 green and an X. It's a plant Hydra, so big thumbs up. I love plants. It's a rare. It's a 0/0, and that's it. So you just play it and it dies. I'm kidding. There's a lot of text in the text box. Oh, God. I'm going to take a deep breath before I go into this one. When you cast Genesis Hydra, reveal the top X cards of your library. You may put a non-land permanent card with a converted mana cost X or less from among them onto the battlefield. You shuffle. And then Genesis Hydra comes and enters the battlefield with X +1/+1 counters on it. But they go on to saying there are other developers, we'll say outside of the Magic world, who have contributed their card ideas to M15. We have George Fan, Plants vs. Zombies, the guys that apparently do the Penny Arcade comic that I've never actually read. We have Marcus Pearson, the guy that this is Notch, Minecraft guy. Richard Garriott, who created Ultima. David Serlin, who did Super Street Fighter 2 Turbo HD Remix. That's a big whoopty shit. We have a Rob Pardo, who is a creative chief officer at Blizzard with World of Warcraft. I don't even want to read these anymore.
They're all up on both the Arcana and the news post on Gathering Magic. I mean, it's just basically an unfortunately male dominated collection of designers from across the games industry. A lot of them, you know, kind of with ties to Seattle and then kind of that West Coast region.
I will unfortunately inform you that the designer world is kind of male dominated as of right now, but hopefully that will change.
I guess more as that, you know, aside from gender, it seems like in the past when they've tried to maybe broaden the appeal to other groups by in some ways doing these cross promotional things, in general, I have never been that excited with it. Because unless these are hardcore Magic players, designing cards is hard. I mean, how are they?
All right, well, I'll give him the stage because I have a rant, but I want to leave it up to all the positive things to be said first, so Adam, take it away.
Right, so obviously, coming from like a Magic-centric world where like there's like a small design team and like R&D are like these kind of secreted folks that, you know, there's a couple that are kind of more public-facing, and they've kind of grown broader in the years, like Gavin's more public facing, Sam Stoddard writes a column, but like Eric Lauer doesn't really talk a lot. Mark Rosewater does, you know, so you kind of have these people that you're familiar with, but there's like a much larger team that's kind of behind it. That's not how it is like in necessarily all aspects of the gaming industry. Like there are people who are specifically, that's what they do. And they'll go from one company to another, or they'll pitch ideas. And it's very much kind of like that producer director role at a movie. Like, you know what you're getting when you hear Michael Bay, and there are people that really like that, and there's a lot of people complain about it, you know. And so some of these guys are just very popular people that have created a lot of things, and they kind of have their own following. And so I think from the inside out, being like a Magic player, I'm seeing all these other non-Magic people getting a chance to do something that I would murder to do, you know, like, oh, I would, you know, I get to design a Magic card and have them print it. That's amazing. And it's like, who are these people doing this? Like, what do they have to do with Magic? Like, I mean, Justin Gary was on the, Hall of Fame ballot, for the past couple of years. I mean, he's a long time Magic player.
With Brian Kibler. I mean,
unless you're familiar with kind of like the Hall of Fame balloting, like, you're not necessarily going to recognize Justin Gary, because like the vast majority of Magic players only started in the past 5 years. And he was out of the game long before that. So, you know, I think from the inside out, it kind of looks like a bunch of these outsiders kind of getting their fingers into the game. But, you know, designing one card in a standalone core set is a pretty safe thing to do. I mean, it's like, other than creating some sort of special release or like letting them design commander cards, which just kind of takes a different angle. Like, you have to have a lot of insider knowledge to the game. Like, if you're just designing, you know, top-down fantasy tropes, make it into a card, the core set is actually the perfect kind of place to draw on some of those things. And it's like, I don't think it's necessarily bad to kind of get other people talking about Magic, especially these really big communities. I think that's a good thing. I think it's just a really big feel bad that, you know, there's all these Magic players that would love to do that. And, you know, they're not some other Magic game designer, so they don't have anybody walking up and giving them a chance. You know, just it doesn't feel like it's somebody who's magical creating the cards. It's just some guy, and it doesn't mean anything to me.
Okay, I'm excited for the rant. Let me cough quick so I can listen.
All right, it's got some positives, it's got some negatives. So I will say this is probably better for the community than not, in terms of Magic reaching outside of what is currently its boundaries and kind of branching into the gaming world as a whole. However, let me clear some things up. One, the people that quote unquote designed these did not just fill out a piece of paper with their card idea on it or whatever and send it in, and then that got printed. R&D 100% worked with them heavily. They made sure their card got the intent that the designer wanted to accomplish, but not necessarily at the power level that they wished or at the color or whatever. Like, the designers made sure that the card fit within the constraints that they needed for that set. They might have flavored it differently, whatever. So basically, these cards are going to be heavily influenced by an outside designer, but there is certainly R&D influence in every single card. Well,
and they say card ideas in the press release. Yeah, exactly. It's the actual card.
Exactly. So even they're even safer than what Adam was making it out to be, because basically, if R&D doesn't think it's safe, he'll just be like, "Hey, can you give us another idea?" Or, "Hey, we're going to have to modify this card a whole bunch." And then the guy's like, "Okay." So, second of all, the card itself that we have, the Genesis Hydro, is super sweet. I'm a gigantic fan of Genesis Wave. Obviously, this is a callback to that. This is significantly worse than Genesis Wave because it is not going to win you the game every time like Genesis Wave does, but still a sweet card nonetheless. All right. However, I'm not a big fan. I kind of called out this previously when we talked about Waste Not. I'm not a big fan of this whole giving credit to people thing in general. I think it's kind of undermines the industry a little bit because, like I said, these are never is one person designing a card. There is a gigantic team of people doing all kinds of things to it, from simple word editing to power level tuning to I play tested this in a deck and I don't think we can print it like this. And then that gets changed. But maybe they don't ever give you a suggestion about what to change. They just go, hey, this is too strong. That guy had a huge part in this card. Like Snapcaster Mage, the story is that basically every Zach Hill didn't write Flash or something on it, and like everybody played the card without Flash, and they're like, yeah, it's good to go, it's perfectly reasonable. And then basically last minute it got Flash added to it and then shipped, and then the card had Flash, it was a little bit stronger than expected. And so there's just like little things like that like one person just makes a small mistake, and that card was designed by Tiago Chan originally, but like one person, or not Tiago Chan, excuse me, Terry So. One person makes a small little mistake and, you know, things kind of spiral away. So it's kind of a whole team that does these cards. So it feels a little dirty to me just to kind of give one person credit for it. At the same time, I kind of understand wanting to reach out to the celebrities sort of and get other people kind of excited about Magic and where it's going and kind of reaching out and getting involved elsewhere, making friends and allies in the gaming world is never a bad thing. But I don't know. It feels a little forced, personally. I think that even the community one feels a little forced. I would much rather see them do some type of giveaway where, you know, they let one person, you know, somehow win a raffle and come design their own card, and then they get credit for it or something. But they're just a random person, kind of like Tom was alluding to, and not necessarily a celebrity chosen because they're a celebrity. So I don't know. I have mixed feelings about these. I personally don't think they're going to do that. They kind of came out and said these were a cool idea, but we don't think we're going to do them again, I believe. Nothing official, but I think that they've hinted at them not wanting to do them again. So hopefully this is the only time we see them. And I don't know. Personally, I also think they're just ugly. You have to stare on your card, like right below the flavor text, just this person designed my card. Yeah, it's like I don't care that Sam whatever designed my card. Like, no offense to Sam, I like the card, thank you, but I don't want it written on my card. Like, I don't want my chef to sign my plate before he gives me my food. Like,
see, you could merge these ideas together where instead of being designed by it, they could be basically funded by or sponsored by, say, like Fritos or Doritos.
Well, then at least they'd be getting money. Like,
give me like a red and green, I don't know, Dorito chip monster. And, you know, sponsored by Frito-Lay Corporation of the world. And be like, it's a cash grab, but that's awesome. Give me Baja Wave, which is like a Genesis Wave, but it's blue-green and does some other crazy shit. I'll buy that. I'm buying that set.
All right. Tom is apparently a big fan of Taco Bell cards.
I'm just a big fan of Taco Bell in general.
That's fair.
If there was a Magic card that came with like a win a Taco Bell scratch off, I would probably just buy infinite of that set.
We should just look into getting Taco Bell to sponsor us if we feel this strongly, this passionately about tacos.
Yeah, well, their fresco style, you know, menu items are really good. Is it fresco? Yeah,
I actually eat at Taco Bell on occasion because they're one of the few places I can get gluten free fast food.
Oh, are you? I didn't know you were gluten free.
I'm on a gluten free diet. I don't have like celiacs or anything like that.
Oh, okay. My father in law has celiac, so we've got a crash course on gluten free cooking.
Yes, but corn tortillas, as long as you don't get any soft shell stuff there, you get the hard shell stuff, you can actually eat it, which is reasonable considering it's one of the few fast food places that you can actually find edible things that are gluten free.
Yeah, the other one, if you're looking, Wendy's actually has.
Yeah, you can get chili.
The baked potato.
Baked potato is pretty reasonable. All the salads except for the ones with croutons.
Yeah. There we go. This is your MTG
poker. Yeah, I just chain beefy five-layer burritos like back-to-back.
I mean, I do occasionally too, but for the most part, I'm trying to eat gluten-free these days just to kind of help out with my working out and things like that to get me looking a little bit better. Slightly better.
Yeah, because you want to have a nice firm buttock for Adam to slap.
So yes, exactly. I have people to live up to. Yeah. I can't let Adam down.
he wants to be a firm butt slap. All right. Well, that was kind of what I had for the show. I mean, we have some emails. We have emails, but
no more cards. We're talking. You're ruining the flow. We don't care anymore about Journey to Knicks. It's done. We're only talking about conspiracy from here on out.
Man, stop all busting my balls, man. Stop busting my balls. All right. So we'll
I already talked about a sheep. That's how deep I went. I talked about the sheep. That was my card.
let me paraphrase what you said. You just went deep into a sheep?
Deep into a sheep.
Okay, good. I want to make sure I got that right. To alert the authorities.
Now to the email, please.
Yeah, so we have the first one is from we love emails. Email us at mtgpotpourri@gatheringmagic.com.
If you can't spell that, that's normal. It's okay. Look it up.
It's okay. Just go to dictionary.com and you still won't know how to spell it. So we have first email is from Larry. We have fun things to do with Journey into Knicks. So the first thing that came to Larry's mind was combining Ajani with doubling season and Sage of Hours to take a buttload of turns. So it's going to be rare when it happens, but there you go.
A butt slap of turns, even.
There you go. Oh, goddamn viruses. And then, of course, I want to say thank you to the listeners that really rise to the challenge of the blow it for 100 comment from the last episode. We actually had at least two submissions of custom pictures featuring Conley and various magic art and blow it for 100. So I'd like to say thank you to Kai Temple. He was actually our first emailer. He also sent me in a trailer for a B sci-fi movie I have seen, or B horror movie called Birdemic, which, as you can guess, is about a flock of killer birds.
Yes, we could definitely guess that.
So he says he would buy the blow it for 100 on a t-shirt. So there you go.
All right, well, let's start making
tie-dyed MTG Potpourri shirts.
I think spoofing the Che Guevara shirt, just like Conley's face, I'd blow it for 100, just like that. I mean, just plain, graphic, black, stark.
It's pretty much graphic no matter what you do, but I kind of get what you mean.
Don't worry, you guys start up a t-shirt company, and I'll pump out the ideas.
Good. Next, we have Clay. Unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to answer his question this week, because he says, I want to hear Tom sing. And given that I'm starting to lose my voice, this is probably not the best episode to do that. And the only songs, again, I know are children's songs. So I can sing you Boom Chicka Boom. I can sing
Boom Go Chicka Bananas. Boom is definitely not a children's song.
There is a children's version.
No.
It's not that Boom Chicka Boom.
Tom, I have a request. Can you sing The Wiggles' Hot Potato?
Our daughter has not yet discovered The Wiggles. We're still in Sophia the First and Barney right now.
I think it's time to upgrade to The Wiggles and inflict that misery upon your life.
Yeah, so far, I mean, I don't mind Barney. Sophia the First actually is pretty good because it is more of a cartoon. So there's actually a story. They have a message. There's not really a story. You're still kind of creeped out that there's this imaginary purple dinosaur that all these kids are hallucinating and they interact with. And then the adults get in on it. You're just like, what is going on? So Kai, Clay, I will sing on the next episode, but he does say you have an amazing show going there, gents. I look forward to it every week. Keep up the shenanigans and the magic. So there you go. All right. This is one that I liked because it was long and had a good subject. This is from Matt. It says, to the intrepid crew of the USS MTG Potpourri, he says, dearest Boner Jams, Dog Doctor, and the other guy.
Jesus. I'm the third wheel on our own podcast.
Maybe that's your nickname because it's other guy, but it's all one word.
All one word, lowercase, like as minimized as possible.
To be fair, he did use just your suggestion of calling Tom the dog doctor.
Yeah. And also, as another slap to Adam, yours is completely not capitalized in any way. Boner James and Dog Doctor are capitalized appropriately. So this is pretty much just a Conley at this point. Let me begin this truly special email by saying that I highly enjoy your semi-bi partially weekly annex. It's easily my favorite MTG podcast behind Drive to Work, Limited Resources, Brainstorm Brewery, The A-Team, Deck Tease, The Banana Pool, No MTG Daps, and that one by that guy who doesn't know what he's talking about. Put another way, it's better than listening to another Yo Gabba Gabba CD. I kind of like Matt's emails. Says, I highly enjoy Tom
listening
and Adam.
To paint dry is better than listening to another Yo Gabba Gabba CD, but go on.
That's another one I have not yet experienced. I highly enjoy Tom and Adam's beaten down dad stories as they mirror my own day to day, quote, heavy on the kids, light on the fun struggles. And would be seriously interested in hearing more about how magic plays into their day to day family lives. Example, what do your wives, husbands, girlfriends, boyfriends, domestic partners, common law spouses, and offspring think about these silly little rectangles of paper that seem to dominate your every waking moment? My every waking moment is still dominated by little pieces of paper that are formed into diapers, you know, right now. And this leads to an interesting side question for Tom. When you're operating on someone's pet goldfish, are you thinking about magic when you move its tiny little spleen aside to get at its tiny little heart? Because I think you probably want to be focusing on the task at hand instead of that sweet six-card EDH combo you just came up with. So Matt truly listens. That's what I like. Obviously. We've got more. So we have, I also enjoy Conley's obsession with male genitalia. He's like Jonah Hill's character from Superbad, only way angrier and more nerdy. I find it highly endearing.
It's not really an obsession so much as like a fascination.
Yeah.
Like
it's more life
an interest. A connoisseurial venture. Wait.
You're so right. Okay, let me paraphrase.
Backpedal.
Let me paraphrase. I'm a connoisseur of male genitals. Sir, that is not best I've ever seen, but definitely top five. Top five material. Anyways, I know there's supposed to be something in here related to doing something cool with a spoiler. But unfortunately, I have to go address a situation where my two-year-old, Adam and I will understand this, has wrongly deposited poop, pee, puke on a surface not intended for said substance. Keep boning it up, and may you never blow it for less than 100. Signed, the guy, or Matt.
All right.
And it has a nice picture of Conley holding, not sure, Inkwell Leviathan? Or no, Jace the Mind Sculptor, I think. It says, bone me up, blow it for 100. And you look pretty angry in the picture.
I'm never angry. I'm a happy dude.
Oh, I just say you have an anger. Doesn't mean that you're angry on the inside.
I just made $100. Why would I not be
just angry on the outside? Next right, we have.
I want to take the next one. So this is from Adrian.
Oh, sorry. I didn't know. I used to read all the emails, but go ahead.
Yeah, but now we have a second email reader, and you can't even speak. So.
God damn.
Yeah, rest your weary voice, Tom. We'll come back. So this is from Adrian, and basically, you know, it's just as a person who is boned up on many exams, not digital exams, I am in staunch support of Tom and his use of the term.
Yes, we had many people on Twitter to defend me in boning it up as an actual term.
Right, because they want to hear you say bone it up every week. It's not real. You don't want to be boning it up every week.
It's a common, apparently maybe it's a Midwest Minnesota thing, but it's a common euphemism for studying. Is
boning it's not up. Common. When two of the three people agree that it's not common, it is not common.
Okay, we're doing a trip in the time machine. We're going back to the Monday Night Magic where Conley, I can't remember why you even mentioned why you use baby powder in your underwear, and everybody else in the podcast just stopped talking. So we're like, I have no idea what he's talking about right now.
First of all, I had plenty of supporters on that one. I had people. I had people bringing baby powder up to me on the street.
Not on the podcast. We're talking about on the podcast. You just said
people wrote in. They were like, "Yeah, I use baby powder. That is the best."
What do you call this email that Adam is reading right now? These are people supporting boning it up, just like people supported your.
But these people are from Minnesota, so they don't count. You have to be from not Minnesota in order to.
They voted for Al Franken. They're clearly not right in the head.
If he's from not Minnesota, if he's from not a Canadian state. Then I'll count bone it up. But if he's in a Canadian, if he's a Canadian state, it's off the it's off.
I'm gonna let Adam continue after Conley rudely interrupted him.
You
finish this email.
Anyway, so the email goes on. It says, "I enjoy the podcast. Thanks. Keep up the good work." And then it says he wants to help out Tom educating the masses, and he sent a link. You know, copied and pasted a link to an abstract that we'd find amusing. So I'm just gonna read the abstract. Because the punchline is right at the end, we won't miss it. A 27-year-old lady presented with a persistent cough, sputum, and fever for the preceding 6 months. In spite of trials with antibiotics and anti-tuberculosis treatment for the preceding 4 months, her symptoms did not improve. A subsequent chest radiograph showed non-homogeneous collapse consolidation of upper right lobe.
Great job.
Video bronchoscopy.
Bronchoscopy.
Geez, it's been a while since I had to read these medical terms. Video bronchoscopy revealed an inverted bag-like structure in the upper right lobe bronchus and rigid bronchoscopic removal with biopsy forceps confirmed the presence of a condom. Detailed retrospective history also confirmed accidental inhalation of the condom during fellatio. So boning it up. This guy went next level with boning it up.
That one is boning it up. I'll count that as boning it up.
So, yeah, so this is kind of what we call a case report, where you have this really unique case. You don't know how else to share it. These are like the tidbits of medical literature. They usually are fantastic. Because I'm not sure what you would term. I guess it's accidental. Is it really accidental? I don't know. But
accidental inhalation.
Yeah, I don't think she intended to inhale, or he. I don't even know. I don't know if they identified.
Oh, good point. It did say 27-year-old lady. Did.
Oh, okay. So,
but that was very culturally sensitive, though, because you're right. We all potentially could inhale a condom. Do you guys ever see the Coneheads movie with Dan Aykroyd where they use condoms as
chewing gum? Okay. I'll admit it. I've inhaled a condom. Move on. Jeez.
Oh, God. It was ripped from my bronchus. I
can't believe you're going to beat it out of me with Coneheads references. You're an evil person.
God, it's a great movie. All right. So that was Adrian. I mean, did you want to read the next one? Adam, I kind of answered it in a reply.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty straightforward. So this one's from looks like Will. Basically says, I love the show. I've listened to Tom since early Monday Night Magic and Conley and Adam when they joined it. So we're now the afterthought together here, Conley. I like that.
Sorry.
And so basically he was just asking if he knew of a Magic spoiler site that listed the order in which cards were added to the spoiler. And so like he points out, like Gather Magic lists like the last five that were added. Yeah, you remember that MTG Salvation used to have an RSS feed, and so Tom found the RSS feed for that. But basically, you know, there's a couple sites out there where, you know, if you can't check the spoilers every day, you know, an RSS feed will basically dump to whatever RSS reader you want the cards in order, so you can like just catch up on all the spoilers in the order that they happened and be aware of what's going on.
But in defense, though, does Gathering Magic have an RSS feed for that page? I couldn't find it, but that doesn't mean it does not exist.
It doesn't have one. It's just a database. So like if you visit the site, it'll refresh with like the latest information from the database, and it'll report the last five. Just at the top is kind of like a little reminder, but it's not like a continuous RSS feed of each individual card.
But there are sites that have that.
Yeah.
Okay, and I do kind of understand where sometimes you go back to the spoiler and you're like, I think there's 10 new cards. I mean, you can still read it, so you can figure it out. But I can see where sometimes that is useful.
Yeah, I mean, there's some sites like Cool Stuff Inc. has a page where they actually show all the cards, like a little mini picture of the card and the name for each day it was spoiled. So it's not an RSS feed, but you can just scroll and you can actually see like the progression of all the cards that were added each day by the spoiler. So I mean, there's a lot of different ways that you can like get at it if you're looking for it. RSS feeds are nice if you use those.
There's a lot of ways you can get at it if you're looking for it, boys.
If you're looking for
it. Oh, yeah.
Willing to put in the time. And yeah, we need to wrap this one up. This is a little mudslide.
Wrap it up and drop it down someone's throat, if you know what I'm saying.
Yep. Do you want me to go straight to outro? Are we there?
Wait, did we do all the emails? Yeah. All the emails are gone?
Yeah.
That was all the emails. But we love them. Send more. I don't know why. I truly love getting emails for a podcast.
Yeah, next week we're gonna light Tom's esophagus on fire, then make him read them.
Yeah, then he's gonna inhale, I don't know, like an umbrella or something. We'll find out what happens. A rigid umbrella.
We've just escalated to murdering Tom. I'm not opposed. it just seemed like a strong jump from where
we were. Sometimes you gotta take some risks in life.
Yeah,
Tom.
Oh, it's Minneapolis. The Minneapolis Grand Prix is going to be just fascinating. It's going to be truly fascinating.
Oh, yeah. That's like a month away.
Yeah, it's coming soon. So I think next episode I will try to, and obviously with you guys, try to hammer out maybe a little bit more details about where we'd like to try to have some sort of a get-together, you know, an actual location and time.
Yeah, you should probably like call ahead and like reserve places and stuff and junk.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's so hard to estimate how many people. Is it going to be the three of us? Or is it going to be like...
I'm going to guess like 300,000.
Sweet. Okay, so I'll just get the old Metro Dome. They busted it down.
I mean,
there's snow on the ground.
I mean, maybe that's a little high, but that's like, I'm guessing like half our listeners will be there. So like 300,000 seems about.
Well, it's kind of like Price is Right, where you don't want to, in this case, you don't want to, you know, bid too low because then you're going to be screwed. You want to overshoot.
Exactly. And plus, you can afford it. You're a doctor.
If you want to talk about some event planning, Tom, just let me know. I've done an event at Gen Con for the past 2 years for Gathering Magic, so I can probably give you some good suggestions on places to look and what to look for, so that way it's pretty flexible. You know, if like 10 okay. people show up, or if like, you know, 50 people show up, we'll be fine.
That'd be helpful.
We can talk about that.
What if like 2 people show up?
Kind of like, if one of them wasn't me, what would happen?
Exactly. What if I have a date instead, guys? Is that a big problem?
I would say that if for that, I mean, you know, life takes precedence. If you know, if you've got something better going on, I will understand.
I'm just saying, there's a chance I'll be true.
I have. Wow. Okay. All right.
So I vote to move to outro.
Yeah, I was going to make a really bad relation joke, but I'm saving it.
Go for it.
So thanks again for joining us for another very special episode of RPG Potpourri.
It's not special.
Again, you know, if you like listener emails, or you just want to delight Tom, just go ahead and send them to mtgpotpourri@gatheringmagic.com. You know, I'm Adam Staworski. You can get me on Twitter at @the_Stibs, STYBS. I talk a lot about Magic and Commander, as you might imagine. Tom?
You can find me for Twitter at @PSGReader. And or obviously email me at mtgpotpourri@gatheringmagic.com, because I do love emails. I'm not kidding. And hopefully my voice will be back by next week. So, I mean, obviously, thank you again, guys. Adam Conley, it's always fun.
Wait, I was saying how long I go without saying my thing. I was trying to be as silent as possible, and Tom just skipped right past me. All right.
Well, I can't handle silence, damn it.
Well, I was waiting for you to transition it to me somehow. I didn't realize I was supposed to pick it up and run. But then at some point, I was like, I'm just going to remain quiet and see how long I can sit.
I don't care anymore.
All right. So if you can get at me if you're looking for me in Twitter, the Twitterverse area thing, with Conley81, Conley81. And that's about all the places. You can check out articles on channelfireball.com, tcgplayer.com, videos on channelfireball.com. And that's it.
All right.
Good night, everybody.
I'm rubbing my thighs nervously right now. Yeah, good night.
Good night.
We do not know how to end a podcast. Have you realized that?
You said you're rubbing your thighs very nervously. How is that? What are we supposed to say in response to that? What dignified response is there?
Did you turn it off, the recording? Because I didn't hear it.
No, we're still going.
What? Turn it off.
How am I supposed to turn off when I'm rubbing my thighs nervously?
Turn it off, Tom.
Can you hear it? It's so nervous.
Oh, this is the worst.
But doesn't it give you a really good mental image?
This is the worst ending to a podcast of all time. Please, Tom.